So welcome, Jayanti. And from now on, it will be in English. Okay. So what we had done was to write out a mail to all of you and ask if you had any questions to ask Sister Jayanti. And if you had taken that opportunity and given us some questions, then we could have asked them today. Now, we didn't receive any questions. So then I just made them up myself. So... And my thought was, why not sort of be inspired by the room we are sitting in, the Dome of Visions, and talk a little about... Yeah, you can just put... Okay. talk about visions and the future. And so my first question to you, Jayanti, is if we look at the present conditions of the world, and it seems in many ways to be quite chaotic, and you know, what's happening around in the world in terms of conflicts and wars, and it can seem a bit despairing sometimes. So, and it can be a bit hard to find support for one's optimism about the future of mankind. So my first question is there a reason to be concerned about it? And or are there actually signs of improvement that we are not noticing? Subtle signs.
Thank you. Firstly, I just want to acknowledge and appreciate that it's a gathering of people who've been giving support for many, many years. Many of you I know for many years. So thank you for being here, and thank you for all that you've done to carry the work of the Brahma Kumaris forward to this point. And I know that your heart is with us, and so we'll be going further and further and further. So thank you. And Christoph, I hope you're not scared of me anymore. And I hope nobody here is scared of me. Thanks for your question, Migo. I remember when I came to the Brahma Kumaris, there had been something within me that said that I don't like to see a world of suffering. My own life was okay, it was comfortable, but I'd had visits to India, and even today you see stark poverty in a very, very sad way. And I thought, what sort of world is this? The world shouldn't be like this. And I didn't know what I could do about it. I had no idea. But I wanted to do something for the world. That was my thought in 1964 when I first went back to India and I was 15. And I was very lucky that when I understood the teachings of the Brahma Kumaris, I understood that it was possible to create a better world. And I'll share the story with you, and then you can see what gave me hope. The founder, Brahma Baba, was still around. I had had meetings with him through my childhood and teenage years. But this was in 1968, when I decided that I wanted to follow the path of meditation. And we called him Baba, Father. And he was the spiritual father who gave me my spiritual awakening, so my father. So Baba said to me, is it possible to have a world in which there is no hunger? And he was at that time nearly 90, I think. And I was just 19, so I didn't have an answer to give him. It was a rhetorical question. And so I waited, and then he asked another question. And he said, is it possible to have a world in which there's no one sick? I waited. The next question was, is it possible to have a world in which there's no sorrow? And Baba said, yes, it is possible. But such a world can only come when there's no lust or anger or greed or attachment or ego. And it's possible for such a world to come when we first deal with all of these things within ourselves. And yes, it's possible to do that with deep understanding and a connection with God. And somehow, the idea seems so simple. Many years later, I understand how complex it is. But at that time, it seemed very, very simple. All you have to do was to cut out anger and ego and greed and attachment, cross, 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 and you'll have a better world. Sounded very simple, but it made a lot of sense that if there could be a world without these negative energies, then definitely there could be a better world. And so I still hold that vision very deep in my heart, that if we can go through that process of transformation, then such a world can come, absolutely. I'll give you a few signs of what gives me hope. I remember early days teaching meditation, and in London, people would come, they would say Raj Yoga, they would see that, and they think that yoga was something to do with physical exercises. And they'd come, and then they'd find out that it was not so much the physical exercise, it was a spiritual meditation. And then they'd say, well, it sounds interesting, but do I have to believe in God? Can I do meditation without God? And I'd say yes, and it's a fact, you can begin on the path. But today, I don't have anybody who comes like that. Today, people are more accepting, more ready to understand about God. They have an openness that in London certainly didn't exist 40 plus years ago. Another sign, when I went to school in London and I'd have lunch at school, you know what they gave me? They gave me 2 pieces of lettuce, and it was usually limp, it wasn't very nice. And they gave me a few bits of carrot, and they gave me a lump of lumpy potato mashed, and that was my lunch. They didn't know about vegetarian food. And today, if you go to any school in England and you request a vegetarian meal, they'll give you a beautiful vegetarian meal in schools. And so, and that's just London, but generally across the world now, vegetarian diet is acceptable. It's not just for crazy people who are nutty, but it's fine, it's okay. A couple more things, and then I'll hand you back. About 35 years ago, I heard that there was going to be a holistic health conference in California. And that was something very, very new. And today, it's not new. Everybody accepts the idea of holistic health. And at that point, it was just another Californian idea, you know, a fancy fad that had come and will go. But now, absolutely, I don't know if there's medical people here, but medical people will agree that there's an impact of the psyche on the soma, of the mind on the body. Again, a recognition of the power of the mind that's coming back into general awareness. I was at a medical school in Melbourne just a few months ago, and there the lecturer was a medical doctor, and he was a teacher, and he was teaching his students, the doctors to be, about mindfulness. So there's a whole new world that's beginning to open its doors and understand all these ideas which definitely weren't on the agenda 40, 50 years ago. And so there's a slow, quiet, incognito change that's happening. The word values has come into our language. And how long ago was it? About 8, 9 years ago when there was a big financial crisis. Then in England at that time, the papers and the television programs carried the comments that it's not an economic crisis, it's actually a crisis of values. And so people are beginning to understand all of these things. So I think that to come to the point where they understand that, yes, if I deal with my anger and my ego and so forth, and I can be part of the new creation, people will understand that very easily.
But doesn't that apply to a very small number of people that are that have a keen interest in spirituality and self-development? What about the vast majority of policymakers and warmakers? And
sure, the world's economy today runs on armaments. It's the number one industry in the world. And that's England, America, India, everywhere. And so, yes, I understand. But you know, Margaret Mead, a social scientist, once said that whenever there's been any major change that's happened in the world, it's not happened because the majority said there has to be change. Usually, it's a small group of committed individuals who say that yes, there has to be change, and we're willing to be the instruments to make about, to bring about that change, make that change happen. So any changes that happen only happen through a tiny minority. And so if this tiny minority here today have said that yes, we want to support the ideas of spirituality, and the Raj Yoga Center, the Ramakumaris exist in Denmark, it's because of a small group of people. And early days, it was three. I saw three hands, three people stand up. So that's just one little example. But anything requires just a small group, and it brings about massive change because that minority is able to impact the thinking of the majority.
Mm-hmm. So, on a personal level, can you share with us your vision of the future and what you think is needed to take us there? Part of it you have covered, but...
I see that, for example, if I completely, totally deal with whatever is remaining of anger within myself, even the little bits of irritation that keep coming, if I can be totally accepting, completely calm and peaceful, not just part of the time or most of the time, but all the time, I can see that it's a wonderful contribution to peace in the world. Again, I can see that if I really remove any ill feelings that I may have for whatever anybody's done to me in the past, or whatever even their present behavior is with me at this moment. And if I can just have that unconditional love and acceptance, what we're doing is creating the possibility of a world of love. Again, think about a world of honesty, a world of truth. I'll share a story with you. I go to Karachi frequently nowadays because we have a group of people who are meditators there. And in one of my early visits there a few years ago, we had a group of about 30 young people there. And they had decided to have a meeting in the center. It was a group that normally comes together, but they decided this meeting was to be in the center. And I'd spoken about honesty and truth, something like that. One of the senior people who had come with the group here, so not so old, maybe in his 40s, all the others were in their teens and 20s, but this older person said to me, you know, you've spoken about honesty, but how's it possible, especially here in my country, we have nothing but corruption for everything. And I don't think I'm defaming any one country. I think that's true of most countries in the world today, even the Western world. And before I could reply, four young people within the gathering wanted to speak. So they spoke. And two young women and two young men, all of them shared stories about how one, how her father had died and had left his will, and it was being held up by the courts, and she was being told, you have to give X amount and only then things will be clear. And she decided she wouldn't. She didn't want to go down that road. And so she stuck to it. She won her case. A young man, to get a driving license, again, they told him that you have to pay all the way along till you get your license. And he refused, and he got his license. So there were four young people sharing beautiful stories of practical experiences about how honesty does work. And this man just had to keep quiet and sit down. And there was too much evidence that honesty does work. But can you imagine a world in which the young people of today are saying, we want to have a world of honesty. And if these young people create the leaders, you know, you see in them the leaders of the future, and you create a world in which there's honesty, such a big difference, where trust again comes into the picture. And today, where trust has broken down, relationships are no more based on trust. You know, even 50 years ago in England, if you said something in a business deal, your word was your contract. You know, you didn't have to sign many papers and many things. And today, not only do you have to sign, you have to read all the fine print and make sure there's nothing that's escaped your attention. So I'm seeing that these changes of human personality can bring about a world that we all dream of, a world of love, a world of truth, a world of happiness, a world in which there's compassion and care, where we all share.
Okay. I'm just neutral in this.
You don't have to be neutral.
To some extent, I have. So even if you are basically optimistic and believe in a better future, what happens often is that many, they end up disillusioned or tired in their efforts to make the world better, simply because of so many opposing forces, you know? There are enough of them. So how do you think we can continuously sustain efforts and optimism on a personal level, regardless of all the external influences, which are usually outside our control anyway?
I think what happens is that if we focus our attention and our energy too much on the world outside, I'm not saying to withdraw into caves or into the mountains or into the jungle, but where most of our time is just simply occupied in doing, then we get depleted. And so what we have to do is actually sustain the changes that we're making inside. And if we can do that, then yes, there's still battles to fight, because all the demons are inside of me rather than outside. But if I can connect with God and take that power, and I see change beginning to happen within myself, and I sustain that change through my meditation and my attention to this transformation inside, and I seek the right company, which means that I find gatherings such as this. I make sure that whether it's a group of three that come to the Copenhagen Center early morning, or whether it's a group of 10, whatever it is, but if I continually expose myself to good people and good ideas, then that becomes a stimulus for my own transformation and a support and sustenance for myself. And so I think that, A, do what you can outside, but make time for yourself. And making time for myself means two things: time for silence and time for being within a spiritual gathering. And I would recommend every day. Why? Because you're exposed to the influences outside every day. It's not just once a week. That happens every day. And so to counterbalance that, I need to have the exposure to a spiritual gathering every day.
Do you think we in general are too focused about external problems and issues and trying to fix them and too little focused on the internal factors?
I think that's absolutely correct. I think that's really the crux of the problem. There's some very lovely trees here. I've been appreciating them. And imagine if there's a tree that's decayed and it's rotting, then if you just try to chop off the branches of the tree, you won't get very far because there'll be a new shoot coming somewhere else. But if there's something that's really decayed, then you need to find out what's going on in the root and then deal with the problem at the root. And so many of the world's problems that we are looking at, maybe this sounds too simplistic, but if you think about the whole thing of the economy, then at the heart of it is greed. If you think about the whole subject of armaments and terrorism and all the accompanying things that are going on that are prevalent in the news now, at the heart of it is ego and anger. And so looking at the tree of problems that's so massive today and trying to deal with a bit here, a bit here, a bit here, a bit here, isn't working. In the year 2000, at the Millennium Peace Summit in New York at the UN, it was the first time that the UN had called together the leaders of religion and spirituality, the first time ever. And within that, they told us why they had done this. It was because within every department of the UN, and each one of the secretary, under-secretary generals, assistant secretary generals, they'd all come there. So in every single section, there were more problems than had been resolved in the last however many years since the UN started. And so billions are being spent in each one of the issues that we are facing. But the problems are not decreasing. They're multiplying, they're increasing. A current story is that of climate change. And yes, we have this dome and it's a beautiful idea and we hear many beautiful ideas, but it's not being resolved. The carbon emissions are continuing to increase and we've probably come almost to the point where whatever it is we can do now is not going to make very much difference. And so that's not a pessimistic story, but that's the reality of today's world. And what we have to do is address the deeper issues. And so climate change and the deeper issue of our relationship with the environment, instead of thinking of it just as a resource from which we can endlessly take, but to have a living, harmonious relationship with nature. Nobody knows about that. Very few people think about it. But that's at the heart of the problem. And so all of these things, I think, we are not addressing because we're not going to the roots. We're looking at external, superficial things.
Well, that sounds also like a very long-term thinking or planning, doesn't it? I mean, because we are also facing some very... acute problems?
When people decide to make a shift, sometimes, you know, it takes a critical illness. Take it on an individual level. Somebody comes to a point of critical illness in their life. And in that space of maybe, there's one individual I know, and you were asking me about him yesterday. He went through a period of 6 weeks of very critical illness. When he came out of it, he said, I've changed more in these 6 weeks than I have in all my other years of meditation. it gave him the space and the opportunity and the possibility of going on an inner journey very, very deeply and asking himself many questions that he'd never asked himself. So I see that the crisis of the world at the moment is such that maybe it's pushing us into looking at things from a deeper perspective, and once we begin to do that, then the answers and the solutions are not far away.
So this is the deeper secret. It's actually prompting us to look at...
One wouldn't want illness to come, not to the self or to anyone else. But when it does come, then it brings with itself a silver lining. Mm. And I think that that's the significance of what's happening today. Nobody would have wanted there to be.
There's a message to you.
No, it's mummy. Okay.
Well, maybe you should have phoned her Sunday afternoon yesterday. There is a message there.
It's clearly comic somehow. Okay, next question. These questions are sort of overlapping a bit, and some of them are touching things you have already said. But many people are involved in social and political work and are solely preoccupied with projects and tasks and have very little focus on their personal development and empowerment. And they end up burned out. And then they are neither benefiting themselves or others, obviously. So how do we avoid such a self-deceiving trap, practically, so we can continue?
You see, I think we've forgotten that we're human beings. And the important thing is to be. We become human doings. And so we think that everything worthwhile is only action and things on the external level. We've forgotten that the starting point of anything successful is the being. And if we can spend time being, then I could do less and it would be more successful. It would be worth that much more. It would be more valuable. And so I think that when you forget about the being and you just focus on the doing, then there's plenty to get on with and more and more and more and more. It's very demanding. And there's exhaustion that comes and burnout, as you said. The important thing is to make time for the self and to be able to nurture my own inner world and to allow those qualities that are within my own inner being to develop and flourish. And if I use those inner qualities, which are things like compassion, love and peace. These are not just words, but these are actually the inner qualities of the human spirit. And when we develop these qualities and we start using these qualities in our work, then things happen much more easily and they're going to be far more worthwhile and meaningful and fruitful. And so I would recommend stop. Make time for yourself, and make time for yourself on a daily basis, not just once a week, but every single day. Just as the body needs nourishment every day, in the same way the soul needs nourishment every day. And just as you need to give your body rest every day, not just once a week, but you need to give it rest every day, so give rest to the soul through silence. So to feed the mind good thoughts, good ideas. And you don't get them from the newspapers. You don't get them from the advertisements you see around. You don't get them from video films. But you get them from some spiritual matter, some content that actually uplifts you and inspires you and gives you something to dwell on in your mind every day. So that's the feeding of the mind. And then the rest for the mind is silence. We give the body a few hours of rest every day. And if we don't, we suffer and our work suffers. But when was the last time you gave your mind some time to rest? And this machine is non-stop. It's been going and going and going. Even during our period of rest for the body of sleep, the mind is still dreaming. And so it's still functioning in some way. And so giving yourself time for silence, constructive silence, not silence which is empty, but a silence which is constructive, in which you can start allowing yourself to feel what your own inner world is like, and then sustain that and connect with the divine. This is the way in which I can nurture myself. And then, like Dadi Janki, 98 years old, and you ask her, are you going to retire? And she says, I'm not tired. Why should I retire? Mm-hmm. Imagine, 98. And she's still going strong.
Okay. So you yourself, we know you are living a busy life, traveling a lot with a high level of activities and responsibilities, and probably quite limited private time for yourself, for your institution. And on top of that, you are always exposed to the public eye. So how do you maintain a sense of peace and comfort in the midst of that activity? And what is the source of your strength?
I'll answer the last bit first. The source of my strength is the one above. If I didn't meditate, if I didn't know how to connect with that one, I wouldn't be doing the work I'm doing. But I would have been exhausted a very long time ago. But that energy keeps me going. And apart from the early morning hours, which are the most precious for me, time for silence, whether it's me alone if I'm traveling or with a small group or a very large group, but it's private time, it's silence time. And then the morning class that we have together everywhere in the world. And then again, even if it's just two or three of us who happen to be somewhere, it's beautiful because then we have a very intimate opportunity to share. If it's a big class, great, there's a different level of energy. But through the day, what I try and do is to make sure that I don't let my thoughts get into a train of wasteful stuff. It's very easy to be thinking about things that you don't need to. And I've had to learn to conserve my energy. If it's not of concern to me, I'm not going to think about it. There's somebody else who's dealing with it, somebody else who's responsible, or it's something that happened yesterday and I've done what I can to sort it out today. I'm not going to go back to the past. So all the different avenues that cause a huge loss of time and energy, I've tried to identify what it is that causes my mind to race and to try and deal with that so that I'm gradually eliminating. There's still a few avenues to sort out still, but yes, from what I used to be to what I am today, big, big difference. Very practically, London was a little center. And I thought I was very busy. And today London is a very big center, but it's also the international coordinating center. So there's lots of communication that keep happening, and you've seen it. And yet I don't feel as busy or as stressed as I used to 40 years ago. And so I don't even call it work, but the things that need to happen are happening. And I can stay light about it.
That's interesting, because that indicates somehow that the subjective feeling of being stressed has much more to do with your mindset than with the amount of work and the workload.
It's a reality. Stress is a state of mind. Mm. And you know it for yourselves. When there's something that you're doing that you're passionate about, you can be working all hours and having very few hours of sleep, and you'll still be smiling. And then there's something that you feel you don't really want to do, but you've been told you have to do it, you're supposed to do it. And when you're doing that, then a little bit extra comes and, oh my goodness, not anything more. So, you know, it's my attitude. It's my feeling about something that makes it either a joy and it's a work of art, it's a work of love, or it's pressure.
And even if you are surrounded by people all day and you have virtually no time for yourself to be alone, you have the early morning hours, but that's sufficient for you too.
Even early morning hours, usually in London we have about 25 people. That's on a daily basis. Sometimes if it's a festival day, there's more. And I'm conducting meditation at 4 o'clock in the morning. So even the early morning hours, I'm alone in here, connected with the divine, but physically I'm not alone.
No.
And it was my choice. I wanted to live within a spiritual community. And if you've made that choice and you've stuck with that choice, it's because you see benefit in it.
Mm.
I've taken so much love, so much support, so much benefit. I wouldn't want to change it in the world for anything else. And so it's not people that cause you stress or people that cause you the feeling of being crowded. It's, again, how you view it, your own vision and perception.
Okay. So we see that it's a common trend in our time that people want quick and easy fixes in their lives, and preferably for free. And here they can get it for free, but obviously people want something that can readily be applied to a mundane timetable full of obligations and responsibilities. Do you believe there is such thing as an easy, quick fix in life? And if so, what do you think is the single most important thing to focus on, which yields the greatest revenue, the greatest result, and makes the biggest difference in your life?
I think if a person starts exploring what's going on in their own mind, and you do that even for a few minutes, you begin to ask yourself the question, why am I feeling like this? What is it that I'm feeling? What am I feeling? Why am I feeling like this? It becomes a very fascinating inquiry. And out of your own interest, you want to pursue it further. And it's totally free. The only thing it costs is a little bit of time, but even that is, you know, you can be chopping vegetables and going on this inner journey at the same time, no big deal, because you don't have to think about, you know, how many centimeters is this potato going to be. It's more or less automatic. So going on this inner journey is something that's very beautiful and something that's very, very rewarding. And if you can just start with checking your own quality of feelings, then you'll see how feelings are connected with thoughts. And once you see that, then you start checking your thoughts. Thoughts are more subtle. This is why it's easier to get to thoughts second. Start with feelings first. And then go on to checking the quality of your thoughts. And you'll find that you don't want to have ordinary thoughts or waste thoughts or negative thoughts. You want to have very pure thoughts, very elevated thoughts. And once you begin to feel this, you want to do it more and more. So not difficult, very quick, very easy. Doesn't even take 3 minutes. It takes 30 seconds just asking that question and then see where it takes you.
Introspection, in other words.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you didn't even mention meditation.
But that's what meditation is. Okay. Meditation is the inner journey. Because apart from just checking your own feelings, then you get to the point where you discover that there's a point of stability inside of you that you can connect with. And you enjoy that. And you want to come back to it again and again.
Thank you very much. And I think we have time enough for, if you have changed your mind and you have a question, then you can ask it now. Rudy has one.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me? Oh, good. I said it's really moving to hear you again. And I have a sense in coming to my mind, what is hope? What is hope?
Mm-hmm. What is hope?
I think hope is where you want the highest possible best thing to happen, and yet you're not quite sure if it can. But you know that there's a possibility. And I think what creates hope is something within the human heart that says, we're not content with the way things are today. Things could be better. Things can be better. And so that feeling that something more is possible is what gives me hope. And if you add faith, then if you bring faith in with hope, then it's not just the possibility that something could be better, then the faith makes you believe, yes, that which I hope for can actually happen.
Other questions? One.
Sister Chianti, you mentioned that you tried to identify what was causing your mind to race. What was it?
I'll give you one simple example. I used to get quite agitated if people kept me waiting. I live in a community which has many nationalities, and there are a few people who, now I've got used to it, so I can almost predict that they're going to be late. And now I can laugh at it and not allow it to create any waste thoughts or agitation. And when it's something really that's within a very fixed time frame, I go out of my way to make sure that I tell them, please, you have to be here on time. Otherwise, it used to cause me a lot of waste thoughts. That's one thing. There's many other things.
Any other questions? We have 1 minute.
Yeah, there's a lady.
I think that you're very right in this way that we all have to develop ourselves. And this is not a new knowledge. We have known this for, I think, all time. But I think it's very important to understand the big wave through internet and communication between nationalities, especially young generation. And I think it's very, what to say, the work to work with yourself, of course, is right to do, but sometimes I believe you don't need to understand everything yourself and go through this big process. Of course, it will come through your maturity, it grows also with your age. But I think sometimes it's okay just to let be inspired by other people and just follow without even know everything, because this is a big wave now, and that's why we see many, I don't know, is still sound here? That's why we see, for example, in Facebook just now, there's a lot of people who goes with this suffering from Israel and Palestinian, because it's a suffering both way, and everybody understand very quickly that we have to change our consciousness. So it's not about what really happened. This is also what you speak about with the finances crisis. It's not about in reality what happens out there, but it's the consciousness who can change very quick for millions of people because of this easy way to communicate. And you don't need to understand everything yourself. You can just feel in your heart, you're right, we have to change. That's what I think you should maybe think about also.
Yes,
the big waves.
Definitely.
Thanks. So by this, I think we will conclude the interview. And thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Vigo. You had to do all the hard work. Meditation.
Yes, me again. Om Shanti. Thank